welcome to the 45th episode of the XCast X-Files Podwatch, covering Kaddish and Unrequited. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and with me today is Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Carl.
How's it going, Clara? I've not spoken to you since we recorded The Walk and Oubliette. How have you been in the meantime?
I've been good, yeah. It seems like just yesterday.
It seems like 5 minutes ago, doesn't it?
It does.
Let's dive straight into these ones then, Clara. So, we're in February 1997, which is when both of these aired for the first time. And we're in the middle of season four. So what are your thoughts on season four generally, Clara, just before we dive into Kaddish? Is this a season you're very fond of?
I am very fond of season four, partly because of all the episodes that involve and centre on Scully. So like season four and season five are two of my favourite seasons. I am quite partial to season three. I like a lot of seasons. It's really hard to choose.
Yeah.
But in later life now, I've preferred season four and season five. I think there's some really good episodes in season four, and I think they've proved their success in earlier seasons, and now they're really sort of taking off and trying new things. And I think Kaddish is actually an example of that.
Okay, so Kaddish is season four, episode 15. It was written by Howard Gordon and directed by Kim Manners. And this is the episode in which a Hasidic man appears to have risen from the grave to exact vengeance on his killers. Okay, Clara, so this is another example of supernatural revenge, which is something that Howard Gordon sort of majored in as an X-Files writer. What do you think of this one? Do you like this episode?
I do like this episode. And actually, I would say this is another one of those episodes where you might skip on a rewatch, but partly because the first few times I watched it, I didn't really think it was that special. But rewatching it now again, and as an adult and having experienced more of life, I have to say I think it's really good. It's a revenge story, but it's not a basic revenge story. The story is actually quite affecting and upsetting. It's a story of, you know, persecution. It's a story of hate, but it's also a story of love. And it ends with a romance, really, like a romantic scene. I would say it is one of those X-Files that deals with a community that is, I would say, a different kind of community than what the X-Files is writing normally. X-Files is normally writing about sort of American, institutions, law enforcement, government. And this is another one of those episodes like El Mundo Guerra, which is writing about a community that is one particular ethnic background or one particular religion. But here it's done very tastefully, I think.
Yeah.
And not preachy either. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of discussion in the episode about prejudice, and prejudice is shown, and actually more than prejudice, I would say, I mean, hate crime, and anti-Semitism. But it's not really preachy. I feel that the conversation that Scully and Mulder have with this sort of racist distributor of propaganda,
yes,
is actually a very witty and clever conversation. It's not preachy in the same way that some other X-Files episodes can be. Like Fearful Symmetry is an example of a preachy episode.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, I think it's quite well drawn, this one. I like that scene you mentioned with the propagandist, and you get a sense that him and the thugs who actually commit the violent acts, it sort of blurs the line between who's the more culpable. And another thing that the script does is that the characters are not overly sentimentalized. So Ariel's father, for example, is actually not a particularly likable man. You get a sense that Howard Gordon really did well here to make sure the characters didn't become really one-dimensional, I think. Yeah, and it's got that flip in, from a revenge drama ultimately into a love story at the end of the episode, and I think it works quite well.
Yeah, you're right about the characters. Ariel's father is, Scully says, he's got like a...
He's a terrorist.
He's a terrorist, yeah. He's got a violent past and violent background. And there's kind of there's no clear distinction made, which is good, I think, of showing the terror of the boys that kill, the shop owner, to the hate and the terror spread by the shop owner who's producing the propaganda, and also the terror and the hate of Ariel's father, who, the stuff that he perpetrated. I would say there's something quite interesting here as well about the usage of words in the episode. The episode is all about the power of words. The golem, the sort of man made out of mud, is brought to life by words. The boys are inspired to kill by the hate-filled propaganda, the words of the propaganda that they read and what Carl writes. And the words also allow Ariel to say goodbye to Isaac on her wedding day. Mm. So it's about, and that's interesting as well, because the word that brings the golem to life is truth, and the X-Files is all about truth, and it starts out with the truth is out there, and then the next couple of scenes is the truth basically bringing a monster to life that kills people. So it's a bit of a contrast.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually, because the power of words becomes a key component of another X-Files episode many years later, which is the infamous episode Babylon.
But, yeah, that's true, though. Isn't that as well?
Yeah, but I suppose a lot of people hate Babylon more than I do, but I would concede that Kaddish does it a bit more subtly.
Yeah.
This is quite a personal story for Howard Gordon. This was his last solo script for the series. His name's on another couple of episodes, but with other writers. This one is dedicated to his grandmother at the end of the episode. So you get a sense that this is one he was proud of and it meant a lot to him. And this aired out of order, actually, because this comes after episodes like Memento Mori, when the subject matter has been Scully's cancer. But I believe it was actually produced before all of that. So I don't know if it maybe loses something, because if this had come directly after El Mundo Gira, which I think is when it was filmed, around there anyway, the contrast with that episode, which is not very good, might have led to this one being reappraised a bit more. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've always found it a bit odd that they go from the stuff with Scully's cancer and they don't mention it then for a couple of episodes. And I know that the point is that she's gone back to work, but even so, it seems a bit remiss to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the running order of episodes actually has a lot to do with how people perceive them. So I think about, like, Never Again. I always thought that was kind of in a strange place in the running order. And you're right about it. I think it would be better perceived and better received if it had come after El Mundo Gira, definitely. And you're right, coming after, like, Scully's cancer, there's no mention of the cancer. There's no indication that you know, she's even unwell, you know, in the episode.
Mm. Okay, so final thoughts on Kaddish then. So does this meet the Clara Cook rewatch test for you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, it's a sad episode. Like, it's not an episode that's going to make you laugh, but it's a sad and somber episode. But it does make you think, and there are a few little moments in it that are slightly like a little bit more lighthearted, like Scully trying to explain how the book is burning, the book that they take out of Isaac's grave. And she comes up with this ridiculous explanation as to why this book would burn. And Mulder kind of gives her this, like, even he gives her a little bit of a look, like, what? But, like clutching at straws here, Scully. But, yeah, most of it is sad. But it works. It's a tragic love story, really.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd consider watching this in production order rather than episode by air date order, but that's just me. Yeah, I quite like how earnest this episode is, you know. I respond to that. Maybe not everybody does, because, again, this is not an episode you hear a lot of talk about amongst the fans. But in some ways, that's a shame, I think. All right, Clara, so let's turn our thoughts to Unrequited. Unrequited has a story by Howard Gordon, but the teleplay is credited to Gordon and Chris Carter, and the episode is directed by Michael Lang. And this is the episode in which a military officer is murdered by Nathaniel Teeger, who's a former prisoner of war who can make himself invisible. Okay, Clara, overall impressions, first of all, on the episode Unrequited, please.
So I quite like Unrequited. I like the idea of an assassin that can be invisible. I think it's quite clever. There's some really great shots in this episode, especially one particular one where Mulder actually sees Teeger out of the corner of his eye, and there's a close-up shot, quite close shot of Duchovny's face, and him sort of turning his head quickly to see Teeger and then not seeing him because obviously he's in a blind spot, and then Mulder sort of shaking his head with confusion. You never get that close to the actors' faces, actually, I've noticed in the X-Files. They're often, the whole faces are filmed, but you never really film up close to their eyes. And it happens a bit more later in the series, actually. And so I thought it was quite good, really, to sort of suddenly see Mulder's face close up and him kind of turning his head sort of suddenly. Like, that feeling that something's just right out of the corner of your eye. Nathaniel Teeger is played by Peter LaCroix, I think is how you say his name. He's also the cable car operator in Ascension. And I have this thing where I have this thing where I see someone's face and I recognize it. I have a very good memory for faces. So it took me like the whole episode. I was like, why does he look familiar? Why does he look familiar? And I had to Google him. But he has a really intense stare, which I think is really clever. You know, the man that no one can see is got a really intense stare. And the downside of him being invisible is we don't get to see that much of him, and we don't really get to hear from him that much. And that's a shame, because I think he acts quite well, and he's this very intense presence, but he's also invisible. So that's a bit of a problem. There are some strange things in the episode. Like, I mean, this is minor, but there's some bad flag waving. I mean, the crowds seemed like rent a crowd, you know, like extras. The rallies didn't seem very believable to me. I wasn't sure if Vietnam veterans would really want to be going to big rallies like that anyway. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know much about military gatherings. There was a little shot where Scully and Skinner run through a marching band. I was like, when are you going to see that? I mean, other than then. I thought Skinner was wasted a bit in this episode. He's a Vietnam veteran, and he really says nothing about Vietnam throughout the whole thing.
I was going to say that. There's a couple of kind of oblique references to Skinner's military past here, but there's not many. This could have easily been a much bigger Skinner episode, couldn't it? Like you say, just purely because of the fact we know from One Breath, I think it is, initially, that he spent time over in Vietnam and he had some formative experiences over there. So, yeah, I'd agree. That's a bit of a missed opportunity, I think.
And there's some plot holes, like the calling cards. I mean, the idea of leaving... I mean, if you're going to be invisible to kill somebody, why would you leave a card? And what... Yeah. I mean, I guess they're leaving the cards... He's leaving the cards to scare the... to provoke terror in the victims who are about to be assassinated.
Yeah.
And one of the characters says that, you know, these calling cards were left in... when these assassins went on missions in Vietnam. And I just, the idea that an American Green Beret soldier would go on a mission in Vietnam and leave a calling card, I mean, like, just in the jungle somewhere, I just didn't think that was going to happen. So I think the cards were a bit of a plot.
Like a gimmick.
Like a plot distraction, really. They shouldn't... just him being invisible was story enough.
I think the idea of him being invisible is a nice one. Because you get the sense here of soldiers being metaphorically and literally invisible, you know. Metaphorically, because when they get left behind enemy lines, the implication is they get forgotten about. And then literally, the fact that he's then able to transfer that somehow into being able to disguise himself from sight. So this episode has some really good ideas, I think. I don't think it probably makes the most of them. This one feels a bit padded out to me, I think, because the teaser sequence is a scene that we later see replayed in full, don't we, later on? But I was a bit unclear on what the dramatic effect was there. Because it seemed to me like the first scene after the opening credits could have functioned quite nicely as its own little teaser sequence.
Mm.
So I'm assuming they were a bit short on time this week, and that played into their decision to run the same scene twice, possibly.
I think also the conspiracy and Marita... I can never say her last name. Karavubius?
Kevarubius, yeah.
That's Kevarubius. I feel like she came...
Just call her Marita.
Marita. You know, she just came too late in the episode. I mean, did anybody really understand the conspiracy? I mean, they left some POWs behind enemy lines and denied their existence. But was that because... I got confused at that point. Was that because they... I mean, did he become invisible because he was sort of perceived as invisible, or did he become invisible because they were experimenting on POWs or experimenting on assassins and making them invisible and then leaving them in Vietnam? I mean, I don't know, the whole thing was confusing, and I felt that that came much too late in the episode by that point.
Yeah, she seemed a bit shoehorned in to me, I think. What about this episode then in comparison to something like The Walk, which we discussed a few weeks ago? It seems to me that this episode, the view of the military's a bit more one-dimensional here than in The Walk, because here, you know, all the generals are bad, to put it, you know, crassly. All the lower rank soldiers are hard done by, basically, but it didn't seem that nuanced particularly.
Yeah, the generals are really very much one-note characters, aren't they? There's nothing redeemable about them. You don't see if they have families, which you do in The Walk. You know, the more senior army personnel that or captains or generals or whatever, they have other lives. They've tried to move on with their lives since the Gulf War's ended. In Unrequited, you're right, they're very one note, like they're just basically victims waiting to be killed. Well, not even victims, they're people who deserve to be assassinated, apparently, who are just waiting to be assassinated. I mean, I think the thing that I enjoyed about the episode was the gimmick of the person being invisible and the sort of interactions between Mulder and Scully and Mulder and Scully and Skinner. Other than that, I don't think I didn't really get much from the story, and I didn't really understand what Tiga's motivations really were. He's a very silent person, silent character. So they did inject this element of this other character who is basically housing a whole arsenal of weapons.
Oh, do you mean the guy in the compound?
Yeah, like sort of a right-wing militia man, kind of, you know.
Mm.
Person who's on the brink of being a terrorist, really. He's got his own compound and the dogs and... And I felt like that went nowhere too. And then there's the scene between the general and confronting him in a prison cell. And I was like, why are we watching this? You know, Mulder and Scully aren't going to see this. Like, is Tiga there? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, all I can think with that guy in the compound, we were talking about actors who appear in other episodes. He's the guy who plays like the very pleasant, he's like the sheriff or something that Scully teams up with. In the episode Chinga, with the one with the doll.
Yeah, yeah.
When she's on holiday.
Yeah, he is a nice character in Chinga, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good actor, but I that's the episode I immediately think of him in, not this one. Yeah, even though we talked about Skinner not having a big role, but if you're a Skinner fan, nonetheless, he's got a few scenes here, so he's worth watching for that in that respect. If you're a fan of Marita, she doesn't appear in that many episodes overall either, so you'd probably watch this one on that basis. It's not first-class X-Files. It's maybe not even second-class X-Files, arguably. But it's okay. That's what I would say.
It passes the time, you know. You could... Yeah. It's okay. It's enjoyable. But it doesn't really further the story of anything, really. I mean, if you miss out, I think, you know, you're still going to be able to follow what's going on in the X-Files.
Yeah, and if you're watching late season 4 for the... Scully's cancer storyline, this is one you can safely skip, because again, it's one that's not mentioned at all in this episode. So
yeah, and if you want to see Skinner, I do think there are other episodes where there's more Skinner doing more things.
Okay, so that was Kaddish and Unrequited. Tomorrow on the XCast Exiles Podwatch, the episodes being talked about are Tempest Fugit and Max. In the meantime, please find us on Twitter at @X_cast or on Facebook, and you can look for our Facebook group, X-Files Basement, the XCast Podcast Fan Group. My thanks to you, Clara, and until next time, listeners, trust no one.